To hear argument in Alderman versus Clean Earth. Are you ready to proceed?
We are, Your Honor. If I may, good morning, Your Honors. Sharon Morgan, I'm with Fox Rothschild. I would just like to take a moment and introduce to the court this morning two summer associates that are with us, Maura Berg and Shireen Arthur, both attending Villanova, being accompanied by my partner, Sheldon Rennie.
Good morning. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning, Your Honors. Ryan Newell, Connolly Bove, Lodge and Hutz. I also have four members, hopefully prospective members of our bar, Mary Akeemian, Michael Gordon, Karen Riesenberger, and Rebecca Workman. Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome to the court. Mr. Comfort, are you ready?
I am ready, Your Honor.
May it please the court. The court below committed legal error and abused its discretion when it confused conducting scientific experiments with testing an hypothesis. Plaintiff's expert, James Mulry, tested his hypothesis using standard methodology before coming to his conclusion. Even the defendant's geologists and their environmental scientists could find no real fault with his methodology, only his confusion. What he did was not perform a series of experiments. No expert in this case did this. What he did was look at standard data and come to his conclusion. The court below then compounded this error by holding both in its Daubert opinion and its summary judgment opinion that the plaintiffs in this case failed because it found, although, and I quote, there is evidence that the defendants, among many others, are possible sources of contamination. Plaintiffs are unable to show that the defendants, as opposed to others, causes contamination, basically saying that we couldn't exclude other things, so therefore we couldn't win the case. It has never been plaintiff's theory that there is only one cause of the contamination. Delaware law is quite clear that there can be more than one proximate cause of an injury.
Mr. Mulry was your causation expert.
He was our exposure expert. Causation, I don't really think, is the proper word because
It's an element of the claim, yes.
And he was. And when I say exposure, because they were contaminated. I mean, there's already clear, this is not like we're not suing for medical injury where normally you would have a doctor to say, did this exposure cause the injury?
Help me understand and how we get away from possible to something more than possible. As I understand it, there were a couple of pathways for the contamination to occur by air and water, and we know that the defendants were involved in using the contaminated material. Now, your expert said, based on what I see at the end and what I see the defendants having, and I look at these two pathways, it's possible that the contamination got from, you know, the defendants to the plaintiffs. Did he ever say more than that?
No, he said it was his conclusion that it did. Very definitely. He in his report as well as in his testimony, my conclusion is a portion of the contamination on these properties was from these defendants. He could not say.
Where would I find that unequivocal statement in the record?
Your Honor. And perhaps if at my rebuttal, I can give you the precise
Great.
Sites.
That'd so, be fine.
Because I can have some of those.
I would assume that's kind of the centerpiece of your case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And he said it several different places, but I would just.
One would be good.
I would give you that, Your Honor. But where what he wasn't able to say and what the court took great emphasis on was he wasn't able to eliminate other sources, but we embraced other sources. I mean, as Clean Earth said in their answering brief, we originally sued over 24 defendants. We have settled with almost a dozen defendants. There were multiple sources. These neighborhood was in the middle of a, surrounded by industrial sites. Some sites were, and we have two neighborhoods, Eden Park and Hamilton Park. Some of the defendants we settled with were closer to Eden Park and a little further away from Hamilton Park. The two properties involved, two defendants involved here, were right across the street from Hamilton Park. Now, some of the plaintiffs were, as the expert said, as close to the source of contamination is the width of a street, 30 feet. Others went quarter of a mile, half a mile. But the DENRAC found arsenic and lead in every single site.
But one of the Superior Court's concern seemed to be the lack of connection between the individual plaintiffs and the individual defendants. The court seemed to say, well, your expert says there's a zone of contamination, and we have this zone of people that were possibly injured or exposed or may need to be monitored in the future. But the Superior Court said you didn't connect them on an individual basis.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's really a false issue. What the nature of the proceeding was, they did it all in mass in terms of Daubert. Certainly that if the court had not done the Daubert, not granted this uniform summary judgment, before you have the individual trials, there might have been a further summary judgment. But all that we had to show right here is it more likely than not that some of the contamination here is caused by these sites. The court did not, in its determination, say, and it could have, well, Piles Lane is right across the street. The expert saw dust blowing from the defendant's properties to the properties right across the street. Certainly, I will hold that those properties have exposure, but I'm going to say a half a mile is too far. The court could have done that. I mean, our expert did say there is a difference in terms of the intensity of exposure the closer that you are. I mean, that's just basic common sense as well as scientific situation in terms of dispersal. But the kind of key aspect is this. Number one, all the lead and arsenic, and there are other materials, but those are the two, were well above background level. There's not what you see naturally. Second, you had these two particular sites. They have lead and arsenic well above background level. You have, and it's in the record, talking about many instances where they are sloppy in terms of how they handle it. Even Clean Earth, they didn't tarp the particular, they did tons, millions of tons of remediation with material that contained this. You have that. So you have those two factors. And then what the expert really said, and testing his hypothesis, is there a pathway that can show how you can easily get the contamination from the source to the plaintiff's property?
Mr. Krempler,
yes.
I'm struggling here to identify precisely what issue we're being asked to decide. Can you describe it or discuss it in the narrowest possible
thing? The narrowest possible thing, and everything, is that the court struck Mulry, saying that his methods were not reliable, and he was the expert that said contamination from these defendants' properties.
That's the superficial issue. What's the deep issue? That is, what issue has to be decided in order to determine whether the court properly or improperly struck Mulry?
You're correct. The issue is whether the court abused its discretion by saying that this expert did not test his hypothesis.
Well,
and the second matter is, I think, the multiple sources.
Let me follow up on Justice Jacobs' question and ask it a little different way with an example, and you tell me if this appears to be what the Superior Court was concerned about. In my hypothetical, let's assume we have a floor fan. And
pardon?
Blowing. It's mm-hmm. on. And it's in this room, and we throw some material in front of it. And the idea is this material ever going to reach the wall at the back of the room? As I understand it, one of the general concerns with Daubert is, do you have something that's a hypothesis that could be replicated by other scientists? You know, if you've got a hypothesis and a theory that the floor fan is the pathway, then somebody should be able to take your hypothesis and put something in front of the fan and see if it hits the wall. And your expert was hypothesizing that these pathways were the vehicle for the contamination, and yet the Superior Court was concerned that there was no actual demonstration that if you started with the contamination at the commercial industrial sites, it would get to the other place.
And Your Honor, that is, but here's how the expert dealt with it. First, he's an expert in remediation, done countless times of remediation of these things. Standard methodology in terms of when you're doing that and looking at it is you look at data in terms of what is the level of the use, what is data in terms of pathways. He looked at wind data. He looked at topographical maps in terms of the runoff. You do not actually replicate and test everything. Doctors don't test in terms of they do differential diagnosis. Lawyers, when they testify and they can be Daubertized, they have their methodology. In this situation, in terms of looking at a test, you would have to get permission to go on Clean Earth's property. You certainly wouldn't do...
Well, that's not a problem, is it?
It could have been. But even beyond that, even if you showed that, we are talking about contamination over periods of 20 years.
Here's my concern, and maybe your expert answered it, and tell me. Let's go back to my floor fan hypothetical.
Right.
And let's assume there's all sorts of contamination with arsenic. And we know there could be more than one proximate cause. But let's assume in my hypothetical that even though site A has arsenic, no matter how many times we throw it in front of the floor fan, it never reaches the wall. Now, we know the wall's got all sorts of arsenic on it, but it's coming from these other sites. And yet, what we find is, no matter how hard we try with site A, that arsenic's not going to reach the wall.
If there is a test that you can do and that replicates the situation, again, what we talk in terms of wind patterns, he says wind is variable. I mean, you can go one particular day and the wind can blow, but we're talking over a 20-year period. If you can say that it is absolutely impossible. But even their expert, when he did the environmental expert, when he did the modeling, he found that there was contamination from Clean Earth under that modeling. He just said it wasn't that much. So the whole kind of question in terms of pathways, even in terms of, and he kind of said, oh, he should have done modeling, he should have done this computer modeling. What they do is they take one stack admission, because there are various sources. He just picked one point source on the Clean Earth property, did that modeling in terms of the amount and the wind pattern. So in a sense, you're computer testing it, and sure enough, he found
help us out here. The court held that that the proposed testimony of the expert was faulty and it would not be presentable to the jury because the hypothesis had not been tested. Now, there are several responses to that, and I'm not sure what yours is. One is that's not correct. We did test it. Another is there's no need to test it as a legal matter. Third is, well, we did the best that we could under the circumstances, and that should be enough. I mean, I suppose we can conjure up some other explanations. Which one is yours?
The first is we did test it.
You did test it.
And you didn't do experiments, but you test it. I mean, a hypothesis is you come a proposed conclusion. You look at data to see whether that data is consistent. And how did he test the hypothesis? He did confirmatory soil samples to make certain. He looked at all the soil samples. He looked at the samples in terms of the defendant's property. He looked at historical examples of how they used it, because, again, we're talking about historical contamination over periods of time, in cases decades, saw that. He then looked in terms of the pathways, came to the sites three times to do that observation, looked at wind data, looked at topographical maps, and confirmed that the pathways and were so close.
Well,
so,
tell us. And going back to Justice Jacobs' question earlier, how did the Superior Court abuse its discretion? If you had to write our opinion and say, in the opening part, in this case we conclude the Superior Court abused its discretion because, how do we complete that?
Because it confused the requirement to test a hypothesis to conduct experimental tests. That is the fundamental thing. I mean, there certainly your example of the fan is an experimental test, and that's one way of doing it. But that's not the only way to test the hypothesis. That is first and foremost what the court erred. Second, what the court erred is putting such emphasis on the fact that there are other sources of contamination when this is a multi-source contamination.
Well, tell us then, with a multi-source contamination, what's the basis in the record for concluding all of the multiple sources generated contamination that reached the plaintiffs?
Well, one, it's our burden only to prove the contamination against the particular defendants that we have, and the expert testified with regard to Seton and Clean Earth and to theirs. They then asked him, was there any other sources? He said, yes, I'm not there. And in fact, in his report, there was Halby, there was another company that which we later settled with, Potts, which he said, this is in the defendant's B87 is his report, and that's in the record, where he goes through and his final conclusion.
Mr. Crumpler, I just wanted you to know you're into your rebuttal time. You'd wanted 8 minutes. You only have 4 minutes and 40 seconds.
I think I will reserve that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Sharon Morgan. I'm with Fox Rothschild, counsel for the appellee defendant below, Clean Earth of Newcastle, Inc. I will be addressing, taking the first 15 minutes of appellee's argument to address the Daubert-related issues, and my colleague, Mr. Newell, who is counsel for the Seton entities, will be addressing the summary judgment issues. I believe that the main thrust of the plaintiff's argument is that the trial court erred by applying the Daubert standard too rigidly and requiring some type of testing. The issue today here is, what did Judge Silverman mean in his use of the word testing? My adversary states that he believes the trial court required a certain type of scientific or analytical test to be completed to fulfill the requirements of the Daubert standard. I believe a close reading of the opinion actually proves to the contrary. On pages 14 and 15, the trial court stated in his opinion in a couple of different places that the court is not deciding what an expert needs to do. He did not suggest a certain type of testing be done. He did not decide that a certain type of scientific methodology should be done. Rather, the trial court said, you have a hypothesis here. You need to prove your hypothesis somehow. I'm not telling you how to do it, but you have to prove it somehow, and you haven't done it. And I believe the arguments...
Mr. Crumpler indicated that your client's own expert proved that there could be contamination.
Our expert, Dr. Krastowski, who is a forensic environmental scientist, did run some conservative models and found trace amounts could have made their way over to Hamilton Park in minuscule amounts, certainly nowhere near even the background levels that are set by DENREC and the state legislature. Moreover, Mr. Mulry admitted both at his deposition and at the hearing that if the soil on Clean Earth, for example, did not exceed 0.002 parts per million of arsenic, it could not create contamination in Hamilton Park at levels in excess of 0.002 parts per million. So if that then goes to the plaintiff's argument that should the property be cleaned up, presumably at 0.002 parts per million, even if the background level is 11 parts per million.
Ms. Morgan, I think part of our problem is that we're trying to, the arguments in some ways seem to be like two ships passing in the night, and we need to find out where the point of collision is. Judge Silverman decided that the hypothesis did not pass muster under Daubert because there had been no testing.
That's right.
You agree?
I agree with that.
You know, I'm not going to tell you what kind of test you have to perform, but there has to be some kind in order to verify or validate the hypothesis. The other side's position appears to be, well, we did. That is, what you know, we did test it, and we're actually being unfairly taken to task because the way we did it was found to be faulty. Is that a fair summary of their position, or is there something I'm missing here?
I think it's twofold. My understanding of the plaintiff's position is that they were required to partake in some sort of a specific scientific test similar to the ones that were testified to at the Daubert hearing, and that's not what the trial court found. The trial court found that the hypothesis needed to be tested in some manner. There are many ways of doing it. He wasn't suggesting what testing or methodology be undertaken by Mr. Mulry to prove his hypothesis, but some type of test needs to be done. Now, I believe my adversary said that that testing was accomplished through a review of analytical data.
The court held you didn't do testing.
That's right.
The other side says did too. No, you didn't. How do we resolve that?
Well, I believe the trial court did acknowledge in the opinion that it's certainly appropriate to look at analytical data, at the samples that were taken by Denrek and the other data. However, that is only part of the – it wasn't a complete analysis. Simply because there is a level of contamination on the plaintiff's properties doesn't mean that it came from Clean Earth. It doesn't mean that it came from it. There was nothing – he didn't look at anything to connect the two properties. He looked at one piece of data. He looked at another piece of data. He didn't look at anything and would have no way of opining what, if anything, was flying in the air from the soil that was supposedly flying from Clean Earth on any given day.
So are you – and I'm really asking Justice Holland's question in a slightly different way. Your issue is whether the court's evaluation of whatever it was that the plaintiff's expert did was an abuse of discretion. That's the issue?
That is the issue.
And it wasn't, at least as you see it, because?
I believe the opinion demonstrates his that he acted well within his discretion as a gatekeeper. I think he exercised the appropriate leeway in satisfying himself that there was some methodology, some scientific basis to support the conclusions that were reached by Mr. Mulry, and he did not
well,
do that.
Well, as I understand what the Superior Court ruled at the end of the Daubert hearing, is Mr. Crumpler's expert could testify with regard to the level of contamination at the plaintiff's site.
That's correct.
But the court wasn't convinced that the expert should be able to testify as to how it got there. And as a result, the court, if we're asking, the court properly exercised its discretion because it concluded the man was an expert and the plaintiff's expert could testify on the level of contamination after the fact. But in the absence of a hypothesis or theory that could be tested and attribute the contamination to these defendants, the testimony was inadmissible.
That is correct. In fact, the trial court found that Mr. Mulry would be unable to testify on air transport. I believe Mr. Mulry acknowledged that he was not an expert in air transport when the trial court asked him at the hearing about the different ways to test air transport. I believe he even said, you know, there are ways of doing it. Quite frankly, it's over my head.
So, right. And as I understand what you used your expert for, it was to basically reinforce the Superior Court's decision. Of course, obviously, you were presenting it as a basis for the Superior Court's decision, but you said, look, our expert has looked at the level of contamination at Clean Air, and we know what the contamination was over at the plaintiff's property. But if you look at what we're starting with, the clean air, you could never get that level of contamination as a result. And therefore, it proves there's a problem with proving this hypothesis because the predicate facts are inconsistent with the resultant facts.
I don't think there was even enough data to, there was never enough data in the record to support any of the conclusions reached by Mr. Mulry. Nothing in his, in anything that he reviewed or analyzed addressed what concentrations, what volume, what type of exposure, if any, these plaintiffs were subjected to as a result of Clean Earth's operations, if any. You know, in the scheme of things, Clean Earth is a relatively recent occupant of that area. This is a heavily industrial area dating back to the late 1800s. These houses have been there since the 1950s, if not before. They were painted with lead paint. Dr. Krastowski's report, in addition to suggesting the various models that could be used to test the hypothesis, pointed out that lead paint is considered to be a fairly significant contributor to elevated lead levels here and around the country. That the report pointed to, you know, the use of lead in gasoline up until the 1970s. There are, I don't think it's disputed, there are various potential sources. Just because Clean Earth is across the street from Hamilton Park and it treats soil, which, by the way, it's only allowed to treat certain levels of soil. It rejects tons of soil each year that are considered too dirty. And it's a heavily permitted facility. It has always been a permitted facility. It's never had its permits taken away from it. It has a stormwater. Any argument about stormwater affecting these properties, Clean Earth has been regulated by a stormwater permit since it commenced operations. So to the contrary, if you look to the day-to-day operations of Clean Earth, the fact that the soil they clean, Denrec in turn uses on its own sites that are undergoing remediation, dispels this notion that Clean Earth must have did it. What it really comes down to, Mr. Mulry is saying, Clean Earth must have done it because look at what they do on a day-to-day basis and look at the plaintiff's property. And all I have to do is look at the levels on the plaintiff's property and look at what Clean Earth did. Therefore, I can conclude that Clean Earth must have caused or contributed to the contamination of the plaintiff's property. However, there's no scientific basis to support that argument.
The historical fact of the wind blowing doesn't.
Quite honestly, Dr. Krastowski, I think, even testified that the days that Mr. Mulry was out there, wind records and meteorological records show the wind blowing in the opposite direction. I think we really needed to get to that. If there was some sort of air model that had been provided or put before the court for consideration, we could have gotten to that issue. But I don't think we even needed to get to that issue because Mr. Mulry essentially conceded that he really did not have the expertise or the scientific background or knowledge to really testify to air transport mechanisms. All he could really do was say, you know what, I was out there for a couple of days and I saw wind blowing, and I from Clean Earth, I saw wind blowing from trucks that were driving through the area, you know. And as for this argument of untarped trucks, he admitted on the stand he doesn't know where these trucks came from. This area is right near the port of Wilmington. Trucks come in and out of the port every single day. They're
not necessarily Clean Earth trucks.
No, there are something around 200 environmentally regulated industries in that area in Newcastle currently. Clean Earth is one of several operations that's ongoing. Mr. Mulry didn't know where those trucks came from. He admitted he didn't know where those trucks came from.
Does everything have to be tested in the sense that if there's information on the topography, you don't have showing that it's a 10% grade. You don't have to go out and test that water will go downhill when there's a 10% grade to you.
As for the Dr. Krastowski actually testified that the gradient suggested that the water would flow away from Hamilton Park toward Clean Earth. But even aside from that, they operate via stormwater permit. I mean, runoff is heavily regulated by Denrec, particularly at a facility that recycles soil. So there is a stormwater collection system in place at Clean Earth that would preclude runoff. Mr. Mulry conceded at his hearing, I believe Judge Silverman acknowledged it in his opinion as well, that contamination could not have come from stormwater runoff from Clean Earth because it is a regulated facility and has had an ongoing permit since it started operations there in 91.
So is there any other source other than wind, water, and the trucks?
Not that I've heard of. It's my understanding that stormwater runoff blowing from the trucks and the piles that they claim they saw wind blowing from the day or days that he was out there. No other source. And again, the mechanism that's in place to treat the soil, the permit does not allow Clean Earth to take levels beyond a certain level. And the models, based upon the levels that are within the permit, those are the levels upon which Dr. Krastowski based his own models. Aside from that, Mr. Mulry, makes the argument that, it should be cleaned up to the level of the, satisfaction of the plaintiffs without regard to, DENREC's own regulatory standards. This whole matter came about because DENREC tested these properties as part of a tanneries initiative. They investigated Clean Earth. And a representative of DENREC stated in his deposition that no action was taken against Clean Earth based upon their investigation. They had no reason to believe that Clean Earth was a source of contamination of Hamilton Park.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Ryan Newell, appearing on behalf of defendants below, Wilmington Chemical Corporation, Seton Mariner Incorporated, and Seton Company. For ease of reference, I will collectively refer to my clients as Seton. At stake here, Your Honors, is whether the defendants can be held liable for potentially millions of dollars of damages when the plaintiffs have failed to prove that the defendants actually caused any damages. Thus, in discussing the summary judgment standard, the one item I have to leave the Court with today is that because the plaintiff's causation expert, Mr. Mulry, was properly precluded from testifying as to causation, and because the plaintiffs have offered no other evidence of causation, summary judgment was proper as a matter of law. Before touching on summary judgment, I'd first like to discuss some facts about Seton. Seton owned an industrial zone property at 58 Piles Lane in Newcastle, Delaware. They purchased this in the 1950s. At various times, they operated a patent leather facility here. The facility stopped in 1987, and Seton has sold the property in the 1990s. Just as Clean Earth, Seton's facility was located on the south side of Piles Lane, whereas the plaintiff's properties began on the north side. As Ms. Morgan just discussed, in 2001, DENREC hired Tetra Tech to conduct an initiative where they were to investigate and identify former tannery sites within the city of Wilmington. Tetra Tech actually initially identified the site of Seton's former operation as a tannery, but it then later concluded that it was merely a japannery. That distinction is important here because japanneries did not involve the use of arsenic, and arsenic was a focus of the tannery initiative and is one of the contaminants that the plaintiffs have alleged have contaminated their properties.
Mr. Newell, let me just back up for a moment here. Basically, summary judgment was granted because causation is an element of the plaintiff's claim, and as a consequence of the Daubert ruling, there was no evidence of causation. Therefore, summary judgment is appropriate. Is there any disagreement with that logic? That is there an argument being made by the other side that even if one eliminates entirely the expert testimony that was the subject of this appeal, that summary judgment should not have been granted?
Are you saying, Your Honor, whether or not we're assuming that causation has been met?
No.
We're saying that there's no agreement, there's no other evidence of causation.
Well, is there any dispute that the propriety of summary judgment rises or falls with the propriety of the Daubert ruling?
No, Your Honor, I don't think there is. And in fact, at the Daubert hearing, which you can find at the plaintiff's appendix A543, they identified Mr. Mulry as the causation expert. And in fact, at the conclusion of that hearing, my colleague, Mr. Seitz, discussed the the outcome of what happens if Mr. Mulray's testimony.
So there's no independent summary judgment issue here. That is no summary judgment issue that's independent of the Daubert issue.
No, Your Honor, and it's exactly correct. If the causation expert falls out, summary judgment is appropriate as a matter of law because negligence and nuisance, as you well know, both require causation. Returning to the Tetra Tech initiative, they initially concluded this was a Japanery. There was no arsenic on site because that does not involve the use of Japaneries. And as Ms. Morgan was stating, in their Tetra Tech's final report in 2005, they failed to make any conclusions as to any of the investigated sites. Moreover, DENREC has taken no steps to remediate any of these properties. Again, the plaintiffs allege that they've contaminated the properties, and as a result, they're seeking both medical monitoring in a property damage case, and they're also seeking remediation of their properties. As we just discussed, summary judgment was proper because the testimony here, when causation testimony requires testimony outside the knowledge of a common layman, we must have expert testimony provided. The air and surface water theories that are propounded by Mr. Mulray fall outside that. And as Justice Jacobs said, when without these testimony, we have no evidence of causation, and therefore summary judgment was appropriate as a matter of law. Unless the court has any other further questions. If I may touch real quickly on Justice Holland, your question about the fan and about whether or not there was a connection from the fan to the end of the room. I believe that Mr. Mulray may actually have provided the answer for you. We cited this at page 232 of our appendix. And in that, there was the question posed at the Daubert hearing of how exactly would you support your hypothesis, Mr. Mulray? And the answer is basically what Your Honor was alluding to. You would have to be able to support that the pathway was complete. And the only way to know if the pathway is complete was to know whether those contaminants that originated at the source ended up at the end. And Mr. Mulray, in his testimony at that page in the Daubert hearing, states that he was not able to identify the concentrations that traveled from the beginning to the end. So there was no testing.
Thank you, Mr. Mulray.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Last point with Mr. Mulray was not able to identify the concentrations. That's different than saying he was able to identify pathways and it traveled. In answer to Your Honor's question in terms of sites, first A520, which is section 14 of his affidavit, where he states in the basis of his opinion, and he gives the opinion that they are contributing sources to the soil contamination in Hamilton Park and Eden Park. Also, A325 through A328 is his initial report, where he says that quite clearly. Just a few other references in terms of the record. Their industrial hygiene expert at B271 makes it very clear, yes, there was contamination. B257 to 258, that's their geologist, basically said, what methodology would you use? And he cited exactly what our client did. Then when the court pressed him on 261, well, do you have any problems? He said, well, it was kind of a cheap job. And he said, I would look at topographical maps and wind data. But in fact, our expert did look at those topographical maps and wind data. With regard to whether he is an expert in air transportation or in air transport, the court found he was an expert. Now, they're arguing today that, no, he really wasn't an expert. What he said there was, he wasn't an expert on these fancy wind modeling, these computer wind modeling, and that's what their expert did. And sure enough, their expert found contamination. Again, not as much, but that's a question in terms of the damages that come forward. With regard to lead paint, and Wolfson was one of the leading experts on lead paint, but that's a red herring because, quite frankly, Mr. Mulray said the lead levels were much higher outside the house than they were in the house. If it's lead paint, you're going to have higher levels inside the house than you're going to have outside. So lead paint does not explain it. Could there be some small element to lead paint? Yes. Could there be some very small element to cars coming by? Yes, that's background level in terms of lead that we have. And in fact, that's what we're talking about. Background for everybody in Delaware, and everybody's close to cars coming by, is a certain background. This is well above that. With regard to the The key question is the pathways, and that is the hypothesis that he had to test, and he did test it. And he goes through like any particular geologist will do. And there is absolutely nothing in the record to ever say from any expert, and they had two of their experts who were designed to try to convince the court to reject him. Not a single one said his methodology was wrong. They simply said his conclusion was wrong. He added wrong, but he at least is doing addition if that is the proper methodology. So the court, and that's really what the court did, it ultimately said he looked at this expert. I don't think this expert is very good, what a jury might do, and rejected his conclusion. That is not the court's role as a gatekeeper. The Daubert decision is very kind of clear, is that, and I turn the court's attention to the case Panetta, Third Circuit case, which actually just came down. It was an abuse of discretion to insist on these special extra tests. Third Circuit, very clear. The Federal Rules of Evidence, which is the same ones that Delaware has a bias for letting these things in. What the purpose of the gatekeeper is to prevent junk science from coming in. This is certainly not junk science. He is a well-qualified expert. He's using standard methodologies.
Panetta, was that an environmental case? I mean, how does
No, it was not an environmental case. It was an industrial accident. The relevance of that case was simply the question of testing. With regard to the permits, I would just say that there is a testimony in the record that's at A365 that Clean Earth did not put a berm up until late in the day to prevent off runoff. Clean Earth was also cited many times by DNREC for sloppy handling of their contaminated soil. They didn't tarp it. And so there is more than enough evidence in terms of a pathway that they did not contain it. Right. Finally, with regard to DNREC never concluded that there was
Mr. Crumpler, yes? You're out of time. However, Justice Ridgely has a question.
I just want to ask if you agree that on the summary judgment motion, the only issue is the exclusion of your expert.
I do agree with that.
Thank you all.
Thank
the court
you
appreciates your arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement and take a brief recess.